Hello and welcome to episode 53 of Fortnite and Film. I'm your host, Jason.
I'm your co-host, George.
And I'm your third co-host, Jacob.
Thanks for tuning in. So before we kick off, we have a little change in format to announce. So now we're just discussing one film per episode instead of our customary three, which will hopefully make things a bit more streamlined, quick, interesting, but still with all the insights that you've come to love from the three of us.
We could call it Fortnite in Film halved. I suppose, you know, a week in film has probably already been taken, so it's Fortnite in Film halved.
We will actually be uploading weekly, so for one, which has always been the goal, it just never has eventuated.
I can't remember a time, were we ever uploading weekly or bi-weekly? I can't remember.
Should we remind our listeners what Fortnite in Film means?
Okay, yeah, I can.
For all the new listeners out there, possibly.
So it is not related to the uploading schedule. It is related to, we are discussing what we watched in the past fortnight, and it was more so when, so that's another change, obviously, is the three of us are appearing on every episode now, not just like group episodes. And the name came about originally when we would have alternating co-hosts. So like, for instance, George would be on 1 week and then Jake would be in the other week and there would be 2 weeks between them. So they'd each be discussing what they'd watched the past fortnight. And now we're all on every episode discussing one film, but we're keeping the name. But we will be more regular in uploading, so you'll hear from us weekly and hopefully we'll have some interesting films to discuss. And we'll still be doing our like special group episodes once a month. Where we'll discuss some interesting themes and films and stuff. So, yes, not really that big of a change, but a little tweak, positive tweak.
So what have you guys been watching? Anything interesting?
Well, I watched something I'm going to rave about. It just came out, even though it's actually a 2023 release, which is The Iron Claw.
I've heard of this, yeah. Snubbed at the Oscars, apparently.
Yes, I think having seen Maestro, which I hated, Bradley Cooper, get him off the best actor list and put Zac Efron in the Iron Claw there.
Oh, no, don't even get me started. Zac Efron.
Yeah, he can act. Like, I know. He can act.
I will defend Jason for once in that I've heard rave reviews about him in the Iron Claw.
Think of him like someone like Robert Pattinson, right? Like, I know Zac Efron for me. I'm like, oh, it's
High School Musical.
Right. Like, same with Robert Pattinson. I'm like, oh, it's Edward from Twilight. But, like, Robert Pattinson has shown he can act, right? The Lighthouse, Batman, etc. I'd say this, I mean, I've not really seen many Zac Efron films. I would say this is one of his most serious, probably his best.
I think it's meant to be. I mean, I've seen him in High School Musical, maybe 17 again.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him
comedy
in that,
with,
yeah.
Yeah. Matthew Perry.
But
he's never blown me away. Like, he's never been a serious actor, really. But it seems like he's trying to reinvent himself.
Which is good, because I feel like people like that, they get put in a box, you know.
Call me a little bit shallow, you know. I haven't seen that. Like, I've seen some things with Zac Efron, and I'm not a big fan of his acting. He seems like a really fake person, although I guess acting is about faking things.
But you haven't seen The Iron Claw yet.
Yeah, so
I haven't seen The Iron Claw. It is an A24 movie too, so I'm a bit of a sucker for a lot of their stuff. It's always different.
It was very good. I mean, it made its way into my 100 favorite films list. It was outstanding. I think it was very well shot. Like, it looked very good. The acting was good across the board. Like, not just like Efron. Like, Jeremy Allen White was really good. Harris Dickinson was really good. The guy who played the father, who was somebody called Holt McCallany. He was really good. It was just a very gripping story. I used to be really into wrestling when I was growing up. And I wasn't, the Von Erichs were like in the 80s, so before my time. But I've still sort of like tangentially followed wrestling. Like, I still watch like the highlights on YouTube and stuff. And like, I like to read about it and stuff. So it helps, I guess, if you know about wrestling or somewhat interested in, like, I could appreciate that aspect of it. But even if you're not into wrestling, it's still a great watch, because it's not so much about the wrestling, it's really about the family dynamics of the Von Erichs.
I read about the family, and it's quite a sad story.
It is, it's very tragic.
So I know what I'd be in for if I watched it. But I don't know when it's out in the UK. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say the final line, although I'm sure there's probably a like a synopsis that exists out there that tells you what the plot is anyway. That doesn't even mean to spoil it. But there's a line that Zac Efron says like right at the end, and it like nearly made me cry. It didn't, but it very nearly made it hits. I was like, wow, that is heavy. And the line is so good because it basically just sums up the whole film. Like in that single line, I'm like, that's what the film is about. And that's what makes it so tragic.
Right. It's for, so it was I Am He-Man and We Are the Masters of the Universe. Because he looks like He-Man in that movie.
Yeah, well, you know, it was the 80s. You know, everybody had that hairstyle.
I have to say, his face, I don't know. I've seen a lot of online discourse about his face because he was in a car crash. I know that. But people are blaming it on that.
Oh, like Zac Efron actually?
But his face, he looks so different from what he looked like before.
No, but I mean, like, Zac Efron was himself.
Yeah, he was in a car. Oh, yeah, he was in a crash, yeah. But so he had, like, facial surgery. Oh. But other people are saying it's, like, plastic cosmetic surgery. Mm. And that's why he looks different.
Yeah, I have heard that, yeah.
If you look at him at High School Musical to now, he looks like a different person almost. It's crazy.
He's probably had plastic surgery, would be my guess.
Yeah, which is fine. But I see more discourse about that than about the actual film, which is a shame almost. Jacob, what about you? Anything
in the past, you know, fortnight, I've watched The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. It's a mouthful, you know, of a movie, but oh my God, that movie blew my mind. Like the end, you know, you haven't seen.
Don't say it. No, because it's high on my list. It's high on my list.
Oh, I no recommend it. I guess I'm talking about it on the podcast now, but I did want to choose it as a movie for all of us to talk about, but because oh my God,
bad idea for Jason.
but you know, but Jacob's pick that we're going to discuss in episode 54, that was a bad pick too,
yeah, so. But yeah, I'm just pre-warning.
No, yeah, I know, yeah.
I mean it comes down to the conversation we've had with Jason about the, films being over the top. They try to shock you too much, like it's, because I remember Jason, you've said that before, haven't you? Like they're trying too hard, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of films out there that
I'm calling you out.
I'm happy to respond. there's a lot of films out there that I just think are very pretentious and are very like, you know, they're not half as smart as they want to appear to be. But I mean,
I think The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover. I've really got to think about it to say it. I'll call it The Cook and the Thief. Is you know, because it's a surrealist film. It is, you can probably call it a little bit pretentious in some ways, but everything just works so well. And like the punch of it leading up, like in the beginning, it's sort of hard to understand. Then again, it's probably just my ADHD. And it starts to get better and you really start to grip onto it. And like the cinematography is just so vast is the word I want to call it. It's just so colorful in certain ways, and like the set looks, you know, it's fake. Like it draws attention to the fact that it's like almost like a stage play kind of setup, but you just get so drawn into it with the drama that's happening in it. But again, that ending is just fantastic. Like it's just a punch, and that's where the comedy is too.
Peter Greenaway is one of Britain's probably more like respected directors of like the 80s and 90s and stuff. But I think he's a film lecturer now at some university or something. But I haven't actually seen any of his films, but I've got like a big watch list of them all. And I want to do like a sort of like a journey where I watch them all. And The Cook, The Thief is like high up on that list, because I know I'll like it, or I know I'll appreciate it to some extent.
You'll love it.
No, I'm sure I will. So I will. I did my watch list now is like 7,000 films or something. So I made a priority watch list of like 300 or so, and it's on there. So I'll get around to it eventually.
What's funny, someone the other day said to me, like, oh, every time like I click on a film in Letterboxd, you know, like you being me, you're like, you know, you have it on your watch list. And I was like, well, I know somebody who has way more things on their watch list than I do. So
add this person, you'll see him everywhere.
That's literally me. Yeah. It's more like if I find something that looks vaguely interesting, I'll just click watch list. Even if it's like 10% interesting. So, and also I have loads of private watch lists I've made, and a lot of those that I made, they weren't on my actual watch list. So I just went through them and clicked add to watch list, add to watch list, add to watch list, and they added them all. So now there's like nearly 8,000 films on there.
I think the issue there, it almost becomes like Netflix, where you can't decide what you want
to watch. I know, that's me. I just keep adding stuff to my Netflix list, and I know I'm never going to get around to watching it ever.
But that's why I made this priority one, and I have a load of other private ones, like different genres, different countries. And I know what I'm in the mood for generally anyway, so I can just like zero in on that. But I know what you mean. It sort of reduces it to like, there are 8,000 films in there. Like, how do you know what's in there anymore? Sort of thing. But no, I've tried to narrow it down basically.
Curation. I think the key to everything is curation. With my own like physical collection that I've noticed, getting little sleeves for lower dollar titles and stuff, and keeping the cases for the high budget ones, even if like I'm not a huge fan of them, just in case I want to sell them later. But like my big shelf, like it's curated. I'm always taking things out and putting things in. Yeah. So it's either favorite movies or movies that I want to watch, you know?
Yeah.
And that's it. Like Letterboxd, I add things to the watch list if I find it interesting.
Yeah.
But again, I'd rather have the physical, and I know that it's there and I can just put it in.
Yeah. I've got a pile of films here that I need to watch. We've got Torso, which is an Italian horror. We've got Shoplifters, which is a Japanese film. We've got Blue Collar by Paul Schrader.
Oh, yeah. See, I was just reading an interview with Paul Schrader. He seems like a very, what's the word? What's the word when you are, is it probably like me, actually. you are someone who, you're sort of stuck in the past in a sense, right? Like, that's sort of what.
I know what you mean. He does a lot of essays.
Conservative.
Yeah. No, he does a lot of work on like slow cinema, I know, and like sort of Ozu, sort of a bit more art house. Like he really focuses on art house.
I think he said I wanna say it was Bresson, like the film Pickpocket. Yeah. He said that one was like William Central. Yeah, he was sort of raging against like, because I read it in Sight and Sound, he was talking about like how Gene Dielman being at the top of a new, like being named the best film ever by Sight and Sound. He was like, that's ridiculous. Like, but he seems like an interesting person because he's gone from being purely this writer, you know, he's known for like writing Taxi Driver and that was it, to then being this director in his own right, you know, of like he has that the trilogy, informal trilogy of First Reform, The Card Counter, and Master Gardener, which has just come out. And so it's like he's now, the point of the interview is saying he sort of started off as this writer just writing things for Scorsese, and now he's sort of become purely a director.
He's an interesting guy. So moving on, we've got The Passenger. We've got The Passenger by Antonioni. Ludwig by Visconti.
Oh yeah, the same guy who did The Leopard.
Yeah. We've got The Collector by William Wyler. The Haunting, which is a 60s horror. And finally, The Human Condition trilogy.
Okay. Oh, I think I've heard of that.
Oh, very highly rated on that.
So yeah, there we go. Those are the ones I own but have yet to watch. Oh, and I just wanted to say, because you guys have said what you've been watching. I'm not allowed. My opinion, you had your segment.
You shared your movies and that's it.
I have my say. Yeah.
Carry on. What's your film you want to talk about?
It's not one film, but it's because
it's a trilogy.
It's a trilogy. it's a lot of Hong Kong action cinema, which I don't know if anyone's listening. If you're a fan of Hong Kong cinema, you've got to watch one called Dragons Forever, which has Jackie Chan in it. It's like just the action in that is just next level. It is the final fight scene is probably like the best one I've seen in recent memory. It's just so good.
You've obviously seen quite a bit of Hong Kong cinema.
Mm.
Would you say that Jackie Chan is like the most famous Hong Kong like actor to come out of Hong Kong?
I'd say Bruce Lee is probably but as he died in what, 73, Jackie Chan is sort of his successor almost. But Jackie Chan didn't want to be like the next Bruce Lee. So he kind of like reinvented himself as this sort of like goofy sort of slapstick character in most of his films. But he's just as talented, I think, martial arts wise as Bruce Lee was.
I'm a big fan of Stephen Chow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've heard, have I seen any of his? Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. He's the comedy.
I think Kung Fu Hustle. Shaolin Soccer.
Shaolin Soccer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the main sort of comedian. He's like a comedian out of the main comedy guy out of Hong Kong. But I haven't seen any of his films yet. I started to watch Kung Fu Hustle, but I had to do something else, so I stopped it.
Jason wouldn't like it.
Yeah. Jason would like it.
No, yeah. I've seen some Hong Kong action films and I do like them.
This one's a comedy.
Yeah.
Well, what have you seen?
Okay, well, let me go to Letterboxd and I'll click on Hong Kong. You piqued
my curiosity.
No, I've seen a few and I was like, oh, they're actually quite good. I would like to check out more. So let me go to my map on Letterboxd and I'll tell you.
I've seen 54 now and they haven't let me down yet. But that's over the course of, you know, months.
They do seem a little bit formulaic sometimes, yeah? Or do they, like, pretty original?
Kind of. It's that thing where the plots, a lot of the plots are very, like, paper thin almost. But you're not really there.
It's about the fighting.
You're not there for the story. They're the best action in the world, in my opinion. You're there for the action.
Yeah, yeah.
And the stunts. I swear to God, I've seen stuntmen, like, die in these films. I swear.
Because they
push themselves so far. You're like, how did you not die during that stunt?
There's certainly something about like martial arts films. Hong Kong films sounds like a very broad umbrella of movies.
Well, yeah, you have Kung Fu Hustle.
And
you have like Wuxia. You have like Wuxia, which is like the wire stunts. You have like, it's called Heroic Bloodshed, which is like sort of gun-fu, like gun action sort of thing. You have like gun-fu, that's what it's called, yeah. You have like Jackie Chan martial arts, standard martial arts fighting stuff. You have something called Girls with Guns, where it's like a sort of female hero who's like a policeman or something, and like she's the one who's like the front and center and is like shooting everyone.
It's starting to get a little bit hot in here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're my favorites. So you have like different categories. It's not just. When I say Hong Kong action cinema, I don't mean like it's not just one type, right? There's different variations of it. But like when they punch, you hear the bones crunch. You see the actual hit happen. Like they're flying into glass, into tables, off balconies, off buildings. It's mad.
So I've seen three with different responses. So my favorite one I've seen is called Project A. Which is actually directed by and starring Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung. Mm-hmm. I gave it 4 stars. Wheels on Meals, which is directed by Sammo Hung, starring Sammo Hung and Jackie Chan.
Wheels on Meals.
Yeah, that's meant to be good.
It was all right. I gave it 3 stars. It was funny in parts.
Yeah.
And then another one directed by Jackie Chan, starring Jackie Chan, called Armor of God, which... I wasn't the biggest fan of, but it was okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
You know,
so there we go. I'm sort of semi surprised because I didn't think you'd lean towards that sort of action where it's a bit silly in parts.
Yeah, I mean, like Project A was really funny, and the martial arts was good, and you know,
the other guy in Project A is called Yuen Biao, and he is one of the most like underrated martial artists. Like he doesn't get mentioned. In the same breath as like Jackie Chan or Sammo Hung or Bruce Lee or all those guys, but he was in the one I watched yesterday, and he's just so good. So that's what I've been sort of watching. I'm sort of focusing on Hong Kong at the moment. But yeah, we can we please do like a Hong Kong episode. I'd like love that.
Yeah, well, maybe that can be our first, you know, special episode to end the month. You know,
yeah, Hong Kong action. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Shall we move on to the main attraction of the episode?
Well, Jason chose this movie for all of us to watch. What was our viewing for this episode, Jason?
So, a relatively new film came out a couple of years ago. I thought it was more recent. I thought it was like last year, but it was 2021. It just felt more recent, I guess. So it's directed by Scott Derrickson. I was just looking up who that is. So he's done a few other horror films. He's done like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, Deliver Us from Evil, and he also did Doctor Strange.
Yeah, Doctor Strange.
A bit of a
how strange of, is that?
Very strange.
And then he went from that. He went back to horror in doing The Black Phone. And he's got a film coming out some point in the future, called The Gorge, which stars Miles Teller, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Sigourney Weaver. But that says it's a romantic action film. So again, quite a departure from his horror background. So The Black Phone stars Ethan Hawke, who's one of my favorite actors. And it stars the main character is a boy whose the actor's name is Mason Thames, which was his actually feature film debut. And there's not really many other main characters. I mean, the film revolves around
the sister,
Madeline McGaugh. But the film revolves around Mason Thames, who plays a boy called Finney. And so it's set in Denver in the late 70s. And there's a child abductor, called the Grabber.
Really quick side note, I was telling my mum about this film and like the plot and stuff, and like when I said the Grabber, she like laughed and she was like, what sort of name is that? But anyway, so, the Grabber.
So he's called the Grabber, and yes, steal children. Finney, who, as you said, lives with his younger sister, Gwen, and their father, who is this alcoholic abuser, because their mother died some years before, Finney ends up getting kidnapped by this Grabber, who is played by Ethan Hawke. And in the basement where he's being kept, there is a phone, the eponymous black phone of the title, which the Grabber tells him is disconnected, but it suddenly starts ringing. And on the end of the phone are all the other boys, because he probably abducts boys, all the other boys that have been abducted, who are presumably dead, speaking to him from beyond the grave, as it were. And they help to, you know, they give him hints about different things of what to do. So one of them says, oh, you know, there's like a tile, you know, underneath it you can remove and dig and get out. Like, you know, the door gets left unlocked, and one of them is like, oh, you know, that's like, don't go up there, it's like, it's a trick, like,
don't go up there.
Yeah.
And so they'll
get you, and he'll grab you.
Yeah.
Abracadabra.
And
reach out and grab you.
Okay, be quiet. I'm giving a plot. Just stop this nonsense. and some of the boys who are calling on his phone, like, he knows, like, one of them is a baseball player he played against. One of them is like a friend of his at school. So anyway, these boys are giving him, you know, tips on how to get out. And at the same time this is happening, Gwen, the sister, and this is never really explained, like, we'll get into this later, but, like, Gwen, the sister, has presumably inherited these, like, psychic abilities or something from her mother. And she has visions, and she sees where the house is. So the police go to the house, so at the same time the police are going there and Gwen's going there, Finney escapes. He does escape before this, actually, I should note, but the Grabber grabs him again and takes him back, but he does get out once, briefly. So anyway, the Grabber comes down to well, actually, no, it isn't even him. It's actually the guy's brother.
Yeah, the brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And paranoid. Then once he's discovered, Finny's like, the grabber's like, well, I have to kill my brother now. So he does. And then he goes to kill Finny. But Finny uses all these, you know, tips and tricks that have been told to him by these other boys. Yeah, you know, gets him in a pit and then he like hits him with a phone and then he strangles him with a phone. And the film ends with Finny leaving and the police find out that there's two houses, like really identical houses pretty much, across the street from one another. One of them where Finny was being kept and the grabber and his brother were living, and the other was just being used to dispose of the boys' bodies when he killed them. And the film ends. So it was a fairly quick plot synopsis, but...
The dad, just so I know, the dad makes a sort of half-assed attempt to sort of say that he's like sorry and he's changed and stuff. Yeah. That's sort of kind of...
And then the film ends on like a weird note too, because he's like...
He like changes his name from Finn.
Oh, yeah, well, he's back in class and he's like, he's talking to this girl he likes. He's like, oh, call me Finn.
Cool.
What if I want to call you Finny? That's your name. Like, why can't I call you Finny still?
So I gave it 2 stars, which was sort of surprising because I've wanted to see it since it came out, because I thought it was a very interesting concept and pretty much like even Hawk's one of his actors, I'm like anything with him in, I'll watch. So I was surprised that I didn't like it because I expected to.
I expected you'd like it.
I know. I was disappointed when I didn't. I was like, oh, it was a waste.
Yeah.
So we can get into why I didn't like it later. Yeah. But what did you both think?
I gave it 1.5 stars.
Wow, that's low for you.
Yeah. So I didn't like it at all.
Wow, well, we're in agreeance to start.
We're in agreeance, for once. So again, I won't go into we can clear the ratings, then we can get into it later. But Jacob, what did you think? Are you going to be the outlier?
This is a second viewing for me because it's not like I was super excited to watch it the first time. When it came out, I was like, I want to download a movie and I'm going to watch it. It's going to be Black Phone. It's a horror. I'm going to get it in 4K. And I'm gonna be thrilled. But at the time, I thought it was a good movie. But rewatching it with more of my mind on analysis of it, I was let down. Because I realized it's not that original. It's probably when like the middle of the movie, when things start to heat up, as with other movies. Pretty much every movie. But anyway... when he's escaping and like the dead children are calling him and showing him how to get out and everything. That's when it starts to get a bit more interesting. But most of the criticism that I have is a lot of the archetypes, like he's a magician, like the Ethan Hawke's character, the grabber, he's like a magician, right?
Which is the worst disguise for like a kidnapper going around town. But also, he has a black van with Aaron on the side. He's circling the school in a black van, and the police somehow don't think, this could be suspicious. A guy in a black van circling a school. It's like, oh, that's just like what?
That's another fantastic.
I don't get it. And then the whole balloon thing was so stupid that led nowhere as well.
So yeah. A good point, the van, like, that's overdone. The idea with the magician, and he also wears a mask. I know he wasn't wearing a mask, I don't think, when he was doing the magician stuff. That's a very, like, sort of like clown kind of thing. Like, it's a magician. Magicians can be creepy. They're cringy. They don't have a good reputation in the entertainment business or whichever. So that whole clown shtick is overplayed too, you know. Obviously, John Wayne Gacy buried children under his house too in the crawl space. This guy buried the children in the basement. There's just so much in this. The I See Dead People trope is in there.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into that, because for me, like, the supernatural side of things was just not explained at all.
Yeah,
it
no, felt yeah, so true.
Underwritten. Like, why was Finny seeing the ghosts? Why was he the one? There were five kids before him. Why was he the one that they all chose to help? Why couldn't the four previous ones help?
One point I would say is I don't think he actually saw them.
Okay, like, no, okay, fine. Okay. Yeah, fine. What I mean is they were present. Yes, they were helping him. They were, because there's and also, again, we can get into it. The whole stuff with the sister was just so underwritten and pointless. Like, why was it God that was helping her? Because she was praying to God at night, right? Was she helped by God? Was she helped by these psychic powers? The mother had very vague psychic powers that the dad mentions in an offline. It's like, it's just not explained well at all. And I think she was just put in there to be the sort of emotional sort of core for Finny, I guess. But the police are so shit that they have to rely on a 10-year-old girl dreaming up where the house is, which has no explanation. I just don't get it.
The trope's called The Shining, which is obviously based on The Shining. So, very overplayed.
Oh, about like Danny Torrance and the... Yeah, okay, I get it, yeah.
Yeah.
But at least in The Shining, we did it well, you know what I mean?
The Shining.
I'm going off on a mini rant here, really quickly. You know, when they show like the flashbacks of the kids, like families and stuff, they're like the first two kids, I think it's like the baseball player, they show like a montage of him like growing up and stuff. It's like, you can't just emotionally manipulate me by showing me a 2-minute montage of this kid growing up, and then it'd be like, this kid had a family, he had a mum and a dad, you should care about him because he's dead now. Like, I care obviously that a kid has been killed by him, like, that's obviously sad, but like, don't show me a montage and expect me to be like, okay, I'm immediately more sad that he's dead. Do you know what I mean? It just felt a bit like, it just felt a bit rushed and like manipulative. But that's another thing I didn't like at all in terms of the story.
Father was obviously effed up
a bit
over the whole Shining thing.
Yeah, but that's another cliche alcoholic 70s dad
thing.
That's
what I was gonna
say. It's like when he was beating the daughter, I was like, I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit that you're beating the daughter.
Savage.
Because it's such like a cliche thing that was just put in there to provide some extra conflict for the story. But it wasn't. It didn't seem like organic to me. And the dad was a terrible actor. I didn't like his performance.
She dropped his $8 bottle of vodka on the ground.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I didn't feel impacted. If of course I'm impacted in films if there's a father beating a daughter, if it's a genuine, like, well acted and integral scene,
we want a real, right? We want like a snuff film. We want to.
I want to watch some real father daughter abuse. I mean, you know what I mean. Yes. You know what I mean. Like, it just felt so forced.
It was almost like you could easily expect the daughter to become the serial killer, because there's so many movies where the father is an alcoholic that beats them, like they're in a terrible household and they become the serial killer.
Yeah.
I mean, that does happen in real life.
Oh, yes and no.
But like the script was just poor. Like, it offered no like further insights into any of the characters. There were no like side of like interesting developments with any of them. I like with the grabber, there was no sort of backstory as to why he was doing this, or like attempt at explaining who he was or his motive. Or and I get that some killers are like, they're evil just because they're born evil, sort of thing, but I just wanted a bit more as to like his motive and the significance of
his mask as well.
Yeah, because you know, when the mask is ripped off right at the end, he like screams and like covers his face. That's not explored in any sense apart from that scene. Like, why does he want this mask on?
Identity. So maybe when he has his mask on, he can do all the bad things. But if he doesn't have his mask on,
sure. But
he's at work, you know, because he has a job.
But that's not explained really in the film.
Explained. That's right.
And like,
you have to just understand it.
And there's a sort of vague, like, I guess, sort of sexual inference as to why he's kidnapping the, like, just boys. Because he, like, sits topless with his belt and stuff, you know, but that's not explored further.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's very, either. Yeah, and on that point, it was, I found it, and it's funny you brought up John Wayne Gacy, right? Because I did find it, because I have a, I've probably said before, we've been talking about different things, I have a very morbid interest in serial killers, so I know a lot about serial killers, and I've watched a lot of things on serial killers, and a lot of true crime stuff.
A lot of podcasts about them too.
Yeah, and when this grabber was, and not that I expected to see this on film or even have a reference, but it's like this, you know, I was like, really, there's somebody out there who's just kidnapping boys, and he's just killing them? I'm like, I don't think that's very realistic.
Yeah.
I'm like, I think there's something else going on. And obviously you wouldn't show that on film, but like, you could have referenced it in some oblique way or something, you know what I mean?
It's well, like, some do and some can. But yeah, there's a sort of very vague inference with the fact that he sits topless and like has the belt and stuff. I guess that's sort of meant to symbolize maybe that's what he's doing, but there's no actual further like thing about him sexually using,
I think,
them,
yes, it would have been inferred, but of I'm just realizing the director Scott Derrickson, being, you know, he did Doctor Strange as part of Marvel, maybe he just knows how Hollywood is, and if he goes too far, maybe, you know, he wanted to,
yeah, but that's what certain... I don't like films that play it like super safe. It's just for like the TikTok generation of like, this is a scary horror film that has a one jump scare, and it's like 10% creepy with a kid in the basement. There's a kidnapper called the Grabber. You're meant to find him scary.
I don't find a lot of bad visual language, you know, like subtext, you know, there's just relaxed.
Yeah. It's like a horror for like 16 year olds. I swear.
Scream.
Like,
Scream's a classic.
Scream is a satire of the slasher genre, and it's actually very good. This just is some one basic Blumhouse 2020s horror, which I just don't like. And also, just there's another plot point, right? How did the grabber, he's not realize any of what Finney was doing in the basement? Because like he's tearing off windows, he's ripping up walls.
Oh, the top
he's
of the
tearing
toilet?
Off the No, the,
that
the
was
floor,
probably the most original
top of
thing
the
toilet.
It's like,
movie,
the room
think.
Is sound-
like, the phone is cool and stuff, but him trying to dig out like the wall with the top of a toilet, it's that detail. The fact that it was a very specific item, I don't know. It just struck me as like very creative.
That's fair. That's
little
fair.
Things.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But he's a kidnapper. How did he not check? Surely he goes down and checks the room, checks what's happening. Like he's a rubbish kidnapper, and he somehow killed 5 kids already. So you think he's pretty competent at it, but apparently not. Yeah. He lets him escape.
But also in saying and I agree with you, but that is often how a lot of serial killers get caught. It's usually the obvious things where they overlook it, there's a time when they, like I said, they don't lock the door or they don't do this, and then that's their downfall, right? But I agree, you can do that, but do it in a smart way. Like you said, he wouldn't be this guy who'd killed 5 people, and all you have to check on is the basement, and to your point, you're not noticing all this stuff change.
I found a quote here that you like, Jason. There's a quote here you like. It says, part of the cultural fascination surrounding serial killers involves the public dissecting the figure's motivations, their childhood, their raison d'etre. Hawksvisson simply doesn't have anything beyond a vague throwaway reference to him being a failed magician. Even the masked and seemingly motivationless Michael Myers had a solid backstory. So that's my problem with the grabber.
I had a few other points which are sort of touching on what you've been said already. I mean, okay, so I'll give it a few positives, right? Because I didn't hate.
Yeah, I do have a couple as well. So you say them.
Look, I thought Ethan Hawke was good. I mean, I'm a sucker for Ethan Hawke, so I'm gonna just say he was good all the time. I did like the mask. Like, I thought the mask was scary. It sort of served its purpose. And I mean, I liked the fact that he, you know, you never really saw him get angry. It was only like a handful of times. Like, most of the time he was very
in the
like,
final
relaxed.
Scene. Yeah.
Yeah, in the final scene. Most of the time he was just very relaxed and like calm. And I think that helped to like add to the menace of his character. and like was unease because he wasn't like screaming at Finney and being like whatever. He was just very calm, which I think in that instance is scarier, right? And yeah, I did like the mask and this fact he could like take the top bit of it off or the bottom bit of it off, or he just had the whole thing on. Like, yeah, so I like that. And I will also give Mason Thames credit. I mean, for someone who's however old he was when he was shooting this film, 14 or something, I guess, and being in his film debut, I mean, he wasn't bad. You know, I mean, there are bad. I mean, Christian, I know, is never a fan of child actors, right? But he was all right. You know, somebody making his debut, I can't hate on him too much. I think when he escaped the first time, like, I think that was good because then it was like tension. I was like, oh my god, he's got out. Like, is he gonna get out? What's gonna happen? And I do think the ending was good too because you sort of figure like, okay, well, he's probably gonna kill him, but I didn't know. I was like, well, you know, maybe he's not gonna kill him. Maybe
I don't know. I sort of thought he was gonna escape. You can't. I don't think they, because it's such a safe horror.
I thought the tension was good in like when he escaped the first time when he killed a grabber. But apart from that, there wasn't really much, obviously. I mean, to your point again, the whole thing about the Gwen and the mother—it was all completely glossed over. We're given no detail. It didn't even seem to advance the plot. Other than, and let me just make sure I'm using this term correctly.
Deus ex machina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. It was just a deus ex machina to set up, oh, she knows where he's being held because she saw it in a dream. I'm like, that's so ridiculous. Like,
think of it this way. If she didn't have any of these psychic god powers, then the police would have had no hope of, they wouldn't have found him. So Fiddy would have died. So it's just down to her having these magical powers.
Yeah, well, there's a sentence I saw in a review on Variety, which said, when I was reviewing the film, it said, you might hear about Gwen's nightmare premonition and think cool, or you might take it as the first clue that The Black Phone is a horror film that's going to be making up a lot of rules as it goes along. And I was like,
yeah, I have a similar quote where it says, the supernatural elements are the most insane aspects of all. There's a dollhouse, a phone that connects to the dead, a precocious girl haunted by visions, all half-assed tropes that never synthesize or coalesce in a clever manner. Every major development for the shoehorned in, providing a masterclass on how to lazily construct Deus Ex Machina. The Black Phone itself is a dumb MacGuffin planted to turn the kidnapping scenario into a suspenseful escape room. The whole setup makes no sense. I mean, I find it hard to disagree with that. And then at the top it says, Blumhouse films are easy on the eyes but not on the mind. This should open with a disclaimer. Beware of losing brain cells if you dare think during the movie. Which is perhaps a little bit harsh.
Yeah,
but I agree with the general sentiment.
Yeah, in
that Blumhouse films seem to be like that nowadays.
But I have zero quotes.
Come on, Jake, you need to up your quote game. You know?
Yeah. So yeah. I have another quote. which is from, and so maybe I'll read the quote and then I'll say my opinion on it. So the quote is from Screen Rant, in their review, and it's two paragraphs, so I'll try and read them quickly. But it does, I guess, attempt to give a thing about the grabber and about the point of the film, etc. But I'll say what I think after I read it. So it says, the Black Phone, which is deeper than most realize, is emblematic of the grabber's guilt, much like his mask is emblematic of his shame. He plays games with the boys he takes, forcing them to act naughty so he can better justify beating and killing them. As the Black Phone explained, he can't remove the phone from the basement because he can't absolve himself of the murders he's committed. That the Black Phone is ultimately used to kill the grabber shows the care that was put into this story, basically stating that the Black Phone is about good beating evil. The movie sends out a message about standing up for oneself, and when that's not enough, finding a group to stand with you. Finney can't stop his father from beating Gwen, he can't stop bullies from beating him up, but emboldened by the other victims of the grabber's abuse, he's able to take back control and be bold enough to stand against the murderous evil and violence. This follows him to the end of the film, when Finney is shown to be confident and no longer miserable and scared of the school, as the Black Phone explained. So I thought that was interesting. I don't really agree with it. I think they're stretching and they're sort of clutching at straws. Because I very much came away.
It's just very surface level.
Well, like, I came away from the film, and if I look at, you know, like, so I came away from it thinking, what was the point? You know, and like, if I look at some of the other films, horror films that I hold up very highly, most of which we've actually talked about in the podcast, funnily enough, I can see that there is, you know, some interesting themes behind them, right? So whether it is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, whether it is The Shining, whether it is The Strangers, which I know you didn't like, George, but I think it's fantastic, whether it is something like Seconds or The Lighthouse or Eden Lake, you know, like, I can watch them and be like, okay, yeah, they're horrors and really scary, but there's some deeper things going on there. Whereas here, I got to the end, I'm like, what was the point of that? Like,
I mean, it's spelled out, the whole like self-confidence and finding your way, you know, sort of thing. But it's just so surface level, I didn't find it that impactful. It's like a million films have tried to tell that thing of sort of gaining self-confidence. You know, it's not that deep or that impactful for me anymore. So I can see what they were going for. And also, wait, I've just seen my note here. You know, scene where the friend is like beating up that like large kid to like a pulp. I found it so strange. Like, he literally beats him to when he's like bloody everywhere. He's like beat him like 10 times, and all the kids around are cheering, going woo. And it's like no one has a problem that this kid's been like absolutely pummeled like a pulp.
Well, no, because he explained later. He said, you know, the blood, the more blood, it gets the crowd going. You know,
I just found it so crazy because it just seems so like psychotic, and everyone and all the kids are just like cheering. It's like, what? I don't know what this town is. This town like a psychotic town? I mean, town?
This was the
like,
late 70s enjoy... too. Remember? So
yeah, true. I know he's like a bully. But it just seemed really like far. He like beats him like an inch.
I mean, that's better than like, now. Like kids, you know, kids are shooting each other and stabbing each other. I mean,
I guess, especially in London. Well,
I gave the movie probably 2.5 stars.
2.5. Oh, so we've got 1.5, 2 stars, 2.5.
So the thing is, I didn't add it onto Letterboxd.
Yeah, it's not awful. So... Like, it's not a terrible. I think we're sort of. It's not a terrible film. Like, it has some... Like, I pretty much agree with all of your points, Jason. Like, Ethan Hawke, I think he's being overrated, but he was still pretty good in it.
Yeah, I mean, said, I have a soft spot for him, so I'm always going to...
So if he wasn't in the movie, you wouldn't have watched it?
That's a good question, yeah.
And he wears a mask, too, so you wouldn't have... Maybe it wasn't him. Maybe he got paid for it, but it wasn't even him.
Was it the premise or Ethan Hawke?
I'd say, yeah, it was 50-50. I think the premise interested me, but I think I was more inclined to watch it because he was in it.
I think that's such a problem with Hollywood. Big names.
But I mean, okay, so now just picking up on that point, Jacob, now we're off on this tangent. So do you not seek out films for certain actors or actresses? I'm curious.
I yes and no. Because of course I've got some favorite actors, but say for example, I really love Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, anything like that. But, I mean, Simon Pegg, I love Simon Pegg. You know, he's funny. He is a charismatic guy. Fantastic in those movies. But I can't even think of anything I haven't seen out of the Cornetto trilogy. He was in, like, some of the Mission Impossible movies. But I like Simon Pegg, but I'm not going to watch Mission Impossible because Simon Pegg's in it.
The thing is, he's not a star in those, though. Like, for me, I've got lists of actors, like, I don't know, James Stewart, Cary Grant, some of the old Hollywood guys, as Jason knows. And also recently with stuff like Jackie Chan, Sammo Hung, like, I've made lists because I want to see them in their films. So I guess I'm more with Jason in the sense that if there's a film that's well received and it's starring one of my favourite actors, I will want to see that film.
But would you say that the Jackie Chan movies, if they're written and directed by and starring, you're watching them because, you know, you enjoy Jackie Chan's stuff, but some movies will just exploit the fact that they've got someone in their cast. Like, sure, that's what, yeah, a lot of animations, yeah, do. It's like, you don't see the person, yeah, it's just their voice. And like with the Super Mario Brothers movie, the new one, it's like, I enjoyed it. I'm biased. I love Super Mario, but maybe I enjoy that movie because Super Mario is in it and he's the actor that I'm watching it for, right? But I'm not watching it for freaking Old Mate. The guy from Guardians of the Galaxy, Chris Pratt. It's like a big name. It's like, I'm not you know.
I will say though, if there's a film that's what got a great actor in that I like, if I don't actually want, if the premise sounds dumb or I don't want to watch the film, then I won't. Yeah, then I won't be like, okay, I'm watching this purely for Harry Grant. You know, like it is more. It's a mix. It's a mixture of the two. Was there anything else I wanted to say? I think I covered all the plot holes that I found really stupid. I was saying I agree with your good points. Yeah, I thought the kid, what was he called? Mason Thames? Yeah, I thought for if that's his first film, I thought he was, you know, he was pretty good. And the scene where he escapes, I thought was handled pretty well. I thought the tension was good in that scene when he's doing the bike lock and stuff. And you see the grabber, like, sort of soft focus in the background. I thought that was good. But that's the only scene I felt any sort of real tension, you know. So those are my good points, hence the 1.5 star. It's not a terrible film. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's just
I've certainly seen worse, as we would talk about.
As we know. Yeah. Which for me, I find it impossible to even consider.
I find it impossible to consider how anybody likes these sort of films.
This being better than Fright Night.
Well, we'll save that discussion.
We can get into that
for next week.
Which it is, yeah. Yeah.
Which is our next episode. That's a little sneak peek, isn't it?
Okay.
As we're probably
wrapping
this episode up.
We're sort of off to a bad start for the year in terms of our enjoyment of what we watched. But in saying that, we were all pretty much in agreement, which I feel like is rare. So
that is rare.
I mean, I would take agreement even if it comes with negativity. So that was episode 53. All wrapped up. Episode 54, as mentioned, next week we'll be discussing another horror, not intentionally, it just happened that way, which is Fright Night from 1985. I'm sure I'll be in the minority once again, but that's okay. It's a position I'm used to being in. So,
yep.
Who knows? We'll have to see what we discuss.
Let joy into your film watching.
I do. I got a lot of joy. It was a very sad story when I watched Iron Claw. So,
yeah,
you know, I can. I, as I said, when somebody, I was telling the film group I'm part of. You know, I said, oh, I love Iron Claw. You know, and one of them came back. You know, because they all call me the half star guy. You know, because I've got that reputation.
Oh, that's a good nickname.
Yeah, I'm half star guy. Well. And one of them was like, oh my god, 4.5 stars. I was like, I can enjoy films and give out good ratings when they're deserving. Just a lot of films aren't deserving, so
I would say most of the films you half star are very deserving. But yeah,
I said New Year, same me, so
yeah. New Year, same me. Okay, I like that
very much. I'm resigned, yeah. Your half stars are gonna keep up.
Yes, I've already given a few this year, you know.
You gave like 3 in a row the other day.
I know. I've been on a very bad run of watching
to an Ingmar Bergman film.
Yeah.
And then to one, I think there's another one I liked that you half starred. And I was like, oh.
It's good that you're watching some Bergman, though.
I'm watching another Bergman.
Which one?
The Seventh Seal.
I feel like you're like that more than The Magician.
Well, this is the thing. Like, it's like, what was the director I was thinking of about this? There was a director I was thinking of in terms of, because I know people are like, why do you keep watching stuff you know you're not going to like? Because there's stuff where, so like, this isn't the director I was thinking of, I can't think who it is, but something like PTA, right? So the first one I saw of his, which we discussed, or Christian and I discussed, I think, was Magnolia, right? Which I hated. It was just utterly stupid film. Or you and I discussed it.
Which I liked, for the record.
Yeah. Which I hated, right? But then I saw There Will Be Blood, and I'm like, wow, that was a great watch. Right, so I'm like, that's why I'm like, I don't write people off, you know, after like one film, because I'm like, well, I might like something else.
For me, it's when you send me stuff and you're like, should I watch this in the cinema? And I'm like, you are going to half star that, and you're going to dislike it, but then you do, and then you half star it, and I'm like, I told you were going to dislike it, but it's like, you know. It's good you're trying to, you know.
Yeah, I try, you know, I was going everything with an open mind.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good that you're watching the movies.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like it, rate it, review it, subscribe. And see you next week for Fright Night.